Everyone, welcome to Agents Unfiltered, where we talk about the do's, the don'ts, and the what the fucks of real estate.
I'm Allie.
This is Danielle.
And I'm Cassie Day. Join the three of us every week as we deep dive into some wild real estate cases and give our take.
We are not attorneys and want to make it clear that this podcast or any linked materials should not be construed as legal advice.
Nor is this information a substitute for professional expertise.
We are not lawyers, doctors, financial advisors, and mortgage lenders, but we are your new BFFs.
Okay, you guys. So I have a lot case today.
Okay.
And it is known as the Oregon Love Letter Ban.
Ooh.
You know, I have to listen first. I just am full of opinions.
Allie's ready for it. She's ready for a fight.
So I'm going to start out by chatting about love letters because I feel like most people know what those are, but I kind of want to go over like the pitfalls that we can fall into with them. So obviously love letters are when a buyer writes a love letter about the house to the seller as a way to increase their chances of getting the home as opposed to just financial gain for the seller or whatnot, right? And I feel like we've all had instances like where love letter for us, like right for our clients, where like a love letter has helped.
Yeah.
And then also where a love letter has not helped. Or like I've had sellers that are like, oh God, they wrote it. Like they hate that they wrote a love letter. And then I have sellers that are like, oh my gosh, like I totally want them to get the home. Like, and it's such a personal thing, right? So kind of where this started was in Oregon, the real estate commissioner wanted to get into law. So they passed a bill. The ban was for agents were not allowed to, accept any communication from potential buyers other than customary documents. So the buyers could write them, but then the list agent was not allowed to accept any love letters. So it really put it all on the list agent. So it wasn't really that buyers couldn't write the love letters. It's that
the list agent couldn't
take
it and give it to
correct
the sellers.
That was the bill that was passed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it just basically when it was passed, it just switched up the duties, like, you know, like RCWs. Switched up the duties to what the seller's agent had to do for the seller. So that's kind of where it came from. So it was a bill. It wasn't a lawsuit to start.
Okay.
So that got passed in, or that bill came out in 2021 and it was to take effect January 1st, 2022.
What a time, especially when there's a million offers and
it
you
was
just
like,
want to like make yours just be a little bit different.
Yes, like, it was right in the thick of it. But I think that's what like spurred this. Because remember in Washington State, we heard about it. And then that was going to come down the pipeline for us in Washington State. And Rhode Island also had something kind of similar, which I don't know if that one's still standing. So anyways, before it came into effect in January of 2022, Total Real Estate Group in from Bend, Oregon, filed a lawsuit versus Strode, who is the real estate commissioner, in 2021. But it wasn't heard until into 2022. So the law did take effect in January of that year. And then there was a couple months before it was ruled on. So
I'm on the edge of my seat. What happened? Do they have love letters again?
we're not in Oregon, so it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry for my homies in Oregon.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So here's where they are. This is what they argued. So the whole intent of this original bill was to avoid discrimination.
Yeah.
Especially like based on the fair housing laws, right? That was the whole point of it, which I want to go into in a minute. Their argument, Total Real Estate Group's argument, which I also think is very valid, is that it does the opposite.
Yeah.
Because underprivileged buyers who may not have like the same amount of cash, right? Or as much of a down payment, or they need help with closing costs, where it's not a financial gain for the sellers, can write these letters and then hopefully appeal to the sellers.
Yeah.
So they're making a decision on something other than the financial gain, right?
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because I think like I was reading an interview from an agent in Oregon that was interviewed from like a paper during this time. And he talked about how he's gone into appointments and sellers have basically said, that doesn't look like a family who would want to be in this neighborhood or something like that.
Oh,
and
I'm
like, I have never had that happen.
Yeah,
no. Where sellers have asked for pictures of people. I have also never had that happen.
No.
And so I've never seen personally discrimination based on a lot of the things in fair housing. But I also think about how many times I've had people say, I really hope a family buys my home.
Yes.
Which is also, protected fair under fair housing, you know, and obviously I don't tell them, but like most of the time when letters are written, they're talking about whether or not they have a family. So like, I get both sides of it. I really do, especially when it comes to fair housing, like looking, they researched a certain amount of letters. I think it was like 37 different, letters that they were written.
Yeah.
And they kind of like broke them down.
Yeah.
And so many of them had fair housing violations. Yeah. So let me see if I can find it really quick. But I thought it was really interesting. 27 examples of letters. 13 of the letters included photographs of prospective buyer.
I've gotten a letter.
I always cut the photographs off if someone
Yes.
I've gotten it before and I've just like copied and pasted onto a separate thing because I'm like, that's
no photographs.
Like, you've got a super cute smile, but
we're not including that.
Yes. 23 directly in the text or through photograph revealed information about familial status. So 23 of 27. Yeah. That's a high amount.
Yeah.
14 made specific reference to marital status. Mm-hmm. 12 revealed information about sexual orientation. So like, that's a lot. Get where it's coming from as far as fair housing. And I think personally, I think it's really hard because it really just depends on the seller.
Yeah.
Okay. But also at the same time, like if you're going to write a love letter and you say certain things about yourself, you're trying to appeal to them, but you also have to understand that unfortunately it might do the opposite. So it's kind of your own risk that you're taking.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And like, it really depends. Is the seller somebody who's going to make a decision based on something that's like protected under fair housing or are they, you know, someone who is not, you know, who's just gonna like not discriminate, you know, I don't know how else to put that, but I feel like that's really what it comes down to. And we're not in our seller's heads.
No.
So I do think, and I think we should talk about it after, like what is good to put in,
in letters
and not, because I do think that is a really risky thing that really can be an issue for our sellers, for list agents, for buyer's agents, for everyone involved really. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's kind of what, so that was what the defense brought. Strode, the real estate commissioner, brought when they were sued by the Total Real Estate Group.
Mm-hmm.
And Total Real Estate Group spoke about how it violated First Amendment rights and all the other things I talked about, like how sellers can still be contacted by buyers and all of that kind of stuff. And it didn't actually stop the buyer from writing them. It just stopped the agent from giving it to them.
Right.
And the wording of it, of that, like they can't accept communication from potential buyers other than customary documents, is very, that's a very wide.
Like, what is a customary
document? And then automatically in my head, I'm like, loophole, if you own the optional clauses addendum and check other, like just write a little bit up there. Customary document.
I mean, that's the hard part. Like, and then you probably have real estate agents trying to slip it in different places.
That would be me.
Which
I'd
is
be like,
so not good.
Law.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much gray area.
Can't put a picture in that.
Yes. True. So, in hearing all the arguments, originally, the bill was kind of stayed, like they put a pause on the bill essentially, while they listened to arguments.
Yeah.
And after listening to arguments, the district court found that both the agents and their clients' First Amendment protections were burdened. So it was overturned, the bill, overturned. I'm not exactly sure of the verbiage there. Yes, because they said it restricted buyer's speech directly, restricted agents from drafting offer cover letters. Because think about that. How often do we put something in like the email, right? That's not part of it, but we're like, hey, our clients really love the home, blah, blah, blah. Like, we're just trying to like prop it up. But it restricted that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it also restricted from assisting our clients in drafting the letters,
right.
Which really, if we're doing our job, if we are assisting our clients in drafting a letter, we're helping them avoid things that are going to be fair housing issues, right?
Yeah. If I wanted to be strictly business, I would have done finance. Half of real estate is literally about people. Well,
and that is, yes.
And networking, conversing, and all that.
It's so true. And that is something that one of the agents who was interviewed mentioned, like real estate is the meeting of financial gain and emotional.
Yeah.
And you know, there's, you can't fully separate that, which I was like, that is so true.
Yeah.
It's so true.
So poetic.
I thought that was really interesting. So it is overturned. Okay. They did, I did find another thing that I found interesting of how they ruled whether or not it violated First Amendment speech, which was through the Supreme Court's Central Hudson test. I know. Allie's like, what are we getting into? I'm not even going to go through it all.
I'm like, dang.
But because it's like the Supreme Court ruled that commercial entities didn't used to have First Amendment rights,
yeah,
basically.
Oh.
And in 1942, they ruled that they didn't. And then there was a case, I believe it was in 1980, that was Central Hudson, which is a electric company on the East Coast, in their advertising. It basically, it was ruled that they did have First Amendment rights. And then there's like a test. And there's like these four questions that they ask. And so that's how they determined.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So.
Very interesting.
I thought it was interesting. I'm curious to see where other states go with these love letters. I mean, I know the market's cooled a little bit. And so we're probably not seeing as many. Yeah. I know our legal counsel in our state has suggested not to do them. I feel like it's a really tight rope to walk.
It's so hard.
So
but the fair housing stuff is so, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard because, so like I've been on so many, we've all been on so many different sides of these, right? And I had this one couple, I was selling their home and we had a bunch of different letters with offers. And I did not read the letters because I didn't want to know what they said until I asked my clients if they wanted to read them or not.
Right.
So I printed them all and stuck them in the folder and did not, because they're sent, you know, right. So we have to let our clients know we have them, right? That's part of our duty. We have to provide any information. And my client said, we don't want to read the letters. We just want to make a decision.
Yeah.
And then after they made the decision, they were like, okay, we want to read the letter from the one that we accepted.
Okay.
And so they read that one letter after they made the decision. They were like so excited and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so then afterwards, like I read the other letter because I was like, just curious because they're like, we only want to read that one. And I was like, that's fine. Mm-hmm. They had already made their decision. And again, they were like so excited. They're like, oh my gosh, we actually think we know like their son or something. I don't know. There was some connection there. But the other letter was like equally as great. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think they were already in tears making this decision because it was oh so overwhelming for them. And like they felt bad that so many people were competing for their home.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the letters would have just torn them apart if they had read them prior to making the decision.
Yeah. I had one instance and it's probably like my favorite home that I've ever sold. And it was like this beautiful historical home with so much history, built in the 1800s, like Victorian style, was the first doctor's office in that county. And my clients were huge history buffs. They really worked really hard to like maintain all the history of the house, keep all the original Tiffany light fixtures, all the things.
Tiffany? I'm ready to keep those too.
Freaking gorgeous. And they did end up getting, I think, 9 offers, and there were letters. And the offer that they picked was because the person mentioned, we love history. We're super interested in the history of this home. We're going to maintain it. We love the garden and the yard, your secret garden. And that was what decided it for my clients.
Winner, winner.
That was the most important thing to them was that someone would take care of the history of the home.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that was an instance of.
That was a perfectly written letter.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't, there was nothing fair housing in it. Yeah. It was just that they wanted to maintain the history and they were so excited to own a piece of history in this city that they loved.
Yeah. When I give parameters for love letters, I'm like, if you're going to write it, like, be wary that you're not, you know, talking about, I don't know, necessarily like your gender or all that kind of stuff. Just like kind of go through the list. And I'm like, however, like everyone loves a suck up. Everyone loves a brown noser. Tell them how much you like the carpet they picked or the cabinet color and all that. Like people love to know that you love what they love.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's exactly the perfect way to put it. Yes. If you write a love letter to the home, not to the people, it's so much better.
Like, this is why I love your home.
Yeah.
This is what I envision for your home. And I think that is where, if you take yourself out of it and just make it about the home itself, you're going to probably be okay, you know, and just leave as little personal information as possible.
Because here's the problem. And I think this is where it gets sticky. And most of the time, like, we all walk away, you know, from not getting our offer accepted or whatever, and we move on and whatever. But the reality of the situation is if buyers put things in there that could be fair housing, it opens up this door of the seller making a decision, not based on anything that it could be fair housing discrimination, but makes it, and then it is viewed that way.
Yep.
And of course, you're going to have sellers that could make it and discriminate, you know, so it goes both ways, but you really open up that door. And so I think that's like the liability we have to make sure our sellers know is like, if you want to look at letters,
yes,
if you want to accept these letters, yes, that is a door you could potentially open.
Yeah.
And yeah, you've got to decide if that's what you want to go down. But it's hard because then that means we also can't read them, because
no,
if we read them and we know, it just I don't know. I think it just is it's a hard thing. I understand where this bill was intended, yes, to go, but I also think I'm glad it was overturned.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I do feel like that real estate company hit the nail on the head.
It's a good tool.
Yeah.
It is a great tool.
Used properly.
Used properly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. With everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that that's where it stands. And I'm hoping that the rest of the states, because we had heard about it here for so long and then nothing came of it. So
yeah. Would it be like if there was a church across the street,
mm-hmm,
from a house? Because even if you're writing a letter to the house, you could be like, I love that you're across from the church, blah, blah, blah. Would that be like showing your religion? Or would that be saying,
not necessarily, because why do they
line with that one?
I think it's hard because like they could like being across from the church because they like there's no neighbors there.
Right.
You know, it's not busy all the time. It's not a business. It's, you know, maybe they're only busy a couple days a week. It could be anything. They could love it because they're part of that religion, but who knows, you know?
Right.
So I feel like, I feel like that's a little more acceptable than if you're like, I'm, you know, Lutheran and, you know, that's a whole different ballgame.
My other question with love letters and fair housing, specifically when it comes to marital status, is if that's already in the purchase and sale agreement, is it a fair housing violation if you say in your letter, my wife and I love your home?
That's valid.
That is valid. But here's the thing. It's not a fair housing violation to put it in the letter.
Okay.
It's a fair housing violation to discriminate against someone because it's in that letter.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's true. It's on our purchase and sale for title anyways. Yeah. I don't know if that's like that in every state, but, you know, we do have that already.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, that's not a problem to say that you have it. That's the problem with the letters.
Like if someone's going to break fair housing, they're going to go out of their way to do it. Like if they're going to like violate. I had this one instance. It just made me feel so gross. I was representing the buyer and I was doing the final walkthrough virtually because my clients weren't in the area. And the seller ended up being there and he straight up asked me the ethnicity of my clients. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I called you after. I was so upset. I was like, I can't tell you that. That's fair housing. He's like, I just figured I'd ask. I just want to know who's going to be living here and if they're going to take care of my property. And I was like, what in the actual?
Yeah.
Well, don't sell your house to any little bond girls because I don't do shit for maintenance outside.
I was so upset. But I'm like, if people are going to like,
I know,
violate fair housing.
Well, that's the thing though. And again, like, yeah, you don't have to disclose any of that stuff to your,
ew,
but he's not going to violate, like, you're already signed around, they're moving in.
I know. And it was like a few days before
that's
close.
Just,
and I said, like, I can't answer that. That's a fair housing issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Not really. More, I don't want to answer you. So I'm going to say whatever I can.
Yeah,
I would never, but like,
yeah, because at the end of the day, again, fair housing issues,
if they discriminate, ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if he said, if you said, oh, they're, you know, Caucasian or whatever, right? And he said, oh, I'm pulling the plug and I don't want to sell to these people, that would be a fair housing violation.
Okay.
Although we always want to stay like with
I
a 10
like,
foot pole.
10 foot pole. I'm not answering that question.
And also, like, really, that's just like,
gross.
Yeah. That's just a very, like, ridiculous question to ask.
Why does it matter?
No. And so I feel like that's just a very ignorant question for him. And I think we just like, there's no point in answering it anyways, because who knows
what
where he was going with that.
For asking it. And
my
I
mind would never
part of that conversation.
No.
My mind would never even think to be like,
no.
So weird.
God.
Yeah. But I just, people are weird.
People are weird.
So I think, the more we can avoid dealing with that stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of this happening in a long time, but I know April used to be a big month with fair housing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they would have people go out to open houses and stuff like that. You get phone calls. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting, and I, you know, you get fined fair housing violation. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
They do not play around for good reason. But I got this phone call from this lady who is like a client, just this random phone call. And she asked me about like the crime in the area or in this by this one home or something like that. And I said, you know what? I I don't actually know. I can send you this website where you can look it up for our county and blah, blah, blah. And she asked me some other questions. I forget what they were, but I was just like, what the hell? Who are you? Yeah. Uh-huh. And I was like, you know, I'm really sorry. Like, I really can't give you that information, but I'm happy to direct you in the, to the websites or whatever. So you can look it up for yourself. And she got so mad. She was like, I don't want to deal with some PC realtor and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, first of all, either you are trying to just push me into giving and you're trying to get me some sort of violation, right, which I'm not going for. Or second of all, I don't want you as a client anyways, if this is how you're going to act on our first phone call. So, I don't know if it was somebody testing. Else's
problem.
Yeah, that's basically where I was at. I never heard from her again, shockingly. I never tried to call her again. But I was like, man, like, I felt like I was being tested, but I don't know.
But like, is this a sting? Because this is really going over a line here. This is a little excessive.
Because she kept pushing and pushing. And then finally, I'm like, okay, whatever, lady. But they are really, you know, they're not a violation you want to mess with.
Which is good. They should be in place. And it is such an important thing that we've got in place.
And I think
making sure we're doing our part.
Yeah, doing our part to make sure our buyers are adhering to it when they're writing letters and that our sellers are aware of the potential liabilities looking at them. But they can be very, very beneficial, like you said.
Yeah.
Use the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I've had to send some really embarrassing love letters.
Yeah.
Like, there's some love letters where I'm like, ooh, how do I even like help them with this? And then
help
like
me help you.
Like, and I just have to send them because they want me to. Mm-hmm. One time I apologized to an agent. I was just like, here's this. But it was someone that I knew on a pretty good thing. And I was just like, I don't know.
I can't help you.
But you know, and sometimes too, love letters, like I have a client right now who's drafting one who they're writing a low offer.
Yeah.
And they're going to explain why. Right. And so it's not really a love letter, but I do think
it's
it helps.
More of an explanation.
But they are going to talk about the historical preservation and how much they're going to preserve it. But they're also going to explain why they're offering lower. And I think stuff like that is really, it can help. It can help like the meeting of the minds instead of it like one party versus another. It's like, oh, I see you as a human being on the other side. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
Yes.
So
interesting to watch.
There you go. That's it.
Sweet.
It's a wrap.
This is great.
Nice try, Oregon.
Nice try, Oregon.
Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
See you guys next time.
Bye.